Landscape gardener Xanthi White is with us this spring day with some tips on how to keep the costs of gardening down. Just hearing about the gales in Canterbury and Banks Peninsula, I think they're about to descend on the capital a little later in the day. So yes, it is spring. But anyway, back to our subject. Just how can you get plants for free? This is particularly pertinent for Aucklanders who in recent times have not been able to head to the garden centre. Xanthi is with Xanthi White Design. Kia ora, Xanthi. Welcome back.
Kia ora, Catherine. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. And I know it's trying times. There's some solace to be had in the garden in your lockdown world at the moment in Auckland. I'm curious, straight at the start, I just had mentioned earlier, I had my Jersey Bennies delivered to me from a Dunedin garden centre. These are the seed potatoes and they can be like hen's teeth trying to find at this time of year. So one option in Auckland would still be to order, I suppose it's easy to put some spuds in a box. It's a bit more difficult to get your petunias sent up, right? But it's one option.
Oh, totally. The plants are still, actually the main problem with plants at the moment is the growers missed the autumnal growing season, a lot of the propagation seasons in the last few lockdown cycles. And so it's actually everybody wants their garden, and it's actually the availability of plants as opposed to not being able to get them, because plants come in little courier boxes. And I think it's a really good thing to remember too, is that, you know, plants came over on ships that took 3 months to go from Europe to New Zealand. So, you know, potatoes used to come from a very long distance and travel all sorts of ways. So we can definitely, you know, send potatoes in boxes and deliver them to people's houses. But actually the main issue with plants through these cycles is actually that the nurseries can't keep up with how much people love their gardens right now.
Yes, which is why I had to go hunting for my Jersey Benny seed potatoes. Yeah, they're always under threat. However, the other point about this is the cost. And goodness, when you have gone and stocked up for a good plant up, you can come away with three figures easily spent. What are other ways of getting plants for free?
Well, it's not just about the cost. It's also about the joy of gardening, which is an action, not a destination. So gardening is something that we do. So the pleasure in it isn't just the thing that we create. It's also the process of actually realizing how a garden works. So in terms of part of that pleasure is that stage of actually seeing the plants grow and develop from these tiny little things into big trees. But then as you become more expert as kind of taking plants in, and then realize that you can actually grow them from little bits of wood and tiny little seeds, and that everything you need to know about growing, like anything, that every garden that you can make, you can create from these very small and very simple kind of methods, which is really exciting. And so I think a lot of people are really familiar with seeds, and I think seeds are something that we, you know, you can go to the garden centre and buy, and we're used to buying things that we need. But one of the real magical things is just taking cuttings. So taking a cutting is something that people find quite intimidating, because, you know, they're like, but it's a bit of wood, it's a stick, how is that going to work? And one of the things I always think is most important for people to understand gardening is not what to do, but how it all works. So to understand why a cutting works, you have to be able to look at a plant and look at the stem of a plant and think about what's actually happening in terms of how a plant grows. So when you look at the stem of a plant, you need to look at it and see it as a basically like a tube where the water and all the nutrients and all the hormones and all the things that make the plant grow are coming up through that central shoot. So when a plant is growing, just like through our vascular system, you know, we send all of our nutrients through to different parts of our bodies and it's all that magical stuff. Well, it's the same in the plant. And so when you look at a stem, you look at that stem as like that's where everything's going up and down. So if you sort of think about an elevator and all that information, everything the plant needs is going up and down. When you look at it more carefully, drawing is a really good way to become more aware of how things work. And so if you've ever drawn the stem of a plant, you'll notice that there's a little leaf buds or nodes or the little notches that come out on the side of a stem of plants. So those little points on a plant are basically where things activate. So that is where the plant kind of, so the stems, everything's going up and down. So that's like the floor of the elevator where the action kind of happens. So when you're looking at, so at that point, the plant makes a decision whether to send out a leaf or a fruiting stem or a root system. So when you want to plant to make a root system, and you can actually do this to stimulate growth, but I'll keep it as simple as possible. When you cut a piece of a stem below a node, the plant hormones from the top of the plant come back down, and they come back down and they hit that node and they try and keep going, and the node says, there is nothing below. Send out roots if you can. And so essentially at that point, the message in the plant's going to change. And so the plant recognizes that it's been detached from the parent plant, and it's designed to send out roots at that point. So when you're looking at any plant, what to take a cutting, what you're trying to do is find the position of these nodes. You want a couple above that are going to become the leaves or the branches of your new plant. And you want a nice little node at the bottom with just a little bit below it. The reason you only want a little bit below it is because if you have a long bit below it, that's just going to rot. And if that rots, if you've got your cutting in water and that rots, it becomes the potential, we know, decay. It's another part of the life cycle. So we don't want the decay part of the lifestyle. We want the growth part of the lifestyle cycle. And so just one node will go into your soil or water, a couple of nodes above to become the new plant. So you're taking the tip of the plant, you're counting down 1, 2, 3 nodes and cutting potentially 4, but no more than that, because you want to keep it simple for the plant. So 1, 2, 3, or 4 nodes, cutting it just below that node so that you don't have any waste material below that's going to become decaying matter. And you then also remove any leaves that are going on it, because basically leaves are high maintenance. They're the plants, when it's trying to develop a root system, you want it to focus on that. You can leave a couple of little shoots at the top, a couple of little leaves at the top, but definitely take any that will be below the water line or the soil line. Once again, that's decaying matter. And just leave a couple of little shoots on the top. And then the other thing that we all know plants need to send these signals up and down and to maintain growth and maintain nutrient flow is they need water. So we start our cuttings. The easiest way to sort of learn about cuttings is to do it in a glass jar with water in it, nothing else, because a glass jar allows us and it builds confidence in us as gardeners, because we can actually see those roots start to form, and we can actually be like, it works and it's magical and it reveals itself to us. And so that makes it really exciting. And but we can grow cuttings in soil as well. So the cutting that grows in water will have softer roots. So the roots will be tender. So when we take them out of that water, we have to kind of make sure we've got a good 1.5 inches of root growth happening down there. And we have to be very gentle with them when we put them into a soil medium afterwards, because they've been kind of growing in a sort of soft little magical world, not in the real world of kind of soil and all that activity. So we have to be very gentle when we transplant them, and we have to not just shove them straight out into the garden. We have to sort of pop them up first and give them a little bit of time to transition from, you know, hydroponic kind of fake world into real soil, you know, good solid root development. Whereas soil roots, of course, are growing into that soil medium, and so they will be part of the soil structure that they're growing into.
The unfortunately named rooting hormones, where can they be used for? This is a kind of support for the newly transplanted cutting, right?
Yeah, so it's basically what naturally happens in a cutting that you've taken. Is that the plant should be developing its own rooting hormones. So if you dab it in a little, you can get rooting hormones from garden centres and things, and you can dab it in a little bit of rooting hormone, that just sends a really strong message to that node. Your job is to form the root system of this plant. And so that node switches into root mode, and down come all these beautiful new roots. You can actually create rooting hormone yourself by using willow trees. You know how willow trees roll down rivers, uncontrollable weed.
Yes.
So actually they have incredibly strong rooting hormones. So if you break a piece of a willow tree off and put it into water, they will release so much rooting hormone in that process that that then becomes a kind of affordable rooting hormone that you can just use yourself as well, because the plant just releases, gushes it into that water, and then that becomes will help activate other plants as well.
Some plants are incredibly...
Yeah, the rooting hormone is just kind of being sure that you're just kind of triggering that message.
Yes.
Grow roots now.
Some of them are extraordinary, aren't they? I had a succulent where I sort of snapped a branch off. I can't think of its name. It's a very common succulent, but I just can't think of its name right now.
Yep.
And I literally snapped a branch off and I just stuck it in the soil and it started growing again. But not that simple. Not that simple for all plants. Which ones are a bit more...
Succulents are designed to contain most of their water system within. So
wow.
they are doing the same thing, but you can literally rest it on a piece of soil. You don't even have to stick it in the piece of soil. And it will start to send those root downs because they come from a very low water environment. And so a succulent, actually, it's probably better to just start it out on sitting on a soil base rather than actually in water, because if you take a plant from a low water environment and put it into high water, it might actually be overwhelmed by that and go to mush. Because one of the important things too is when you're growing your cuttings, you need to change that water daily, because you need fresh water. So when plants are growing, water systems don't, stagnating water systems don't create good growth systems for most plants. So plants like water systems that move, water is like a breath that moves through the soil in our gardens. And so you need to change that water daily, because in a soil system, that's what's happening. A river's moving, rain's coming down, things flow through that soil. So you don't want water to sit and stagnate.
Santhi, what are some of the easiest ones? I can swear by the succulent, you can't go wrong. But what are some of the easier plants for the novice to try and propagate themselves?
So hydrangeas tend to be a really good goer that lots of people, but you know, even things like roses, my grandmothers all grow their roses. They all swapped all of their roses by woody cuttings. They would come up with little bags of these sticks. It seemed very magical to me, but it is magical. But so I think hydrangeas are a really good start. Basil plants, a lot of the basils that you get in the supermarket, you'll see there's just lots and lots of little kind of plants going there. Some of them may be grown from seed, but actually growing basil from cuttings is really easy. Rosemary is just like, if you are lacking all confidence, a good piece of upright rosemary is wonderful just to get that stimulation. I think where people just remember, clear off all of those leaves, the lower leaves, before you put it into the water, and keep it in a nice clear container. And watch for that root growth. Watch until it starts to develop, because there's nothing like being able to see something start to happen. It's like we do it with children often when we're teaching them about how seeds work. We put the little, you know, scrunched up piece of paper with a bit of moisture in it and put the seed into a jar so that they can actually see how that root system and stem sort of starts to develop out of that seed system.
Now we need to crack through. There's some questions, so we'll just be as succinct as you practically can be. What about taking cuttings from ferns, asks a listener.
So ferns can be divided often, so it depends on the type of ferns, or there are some ferns like hen and chicken ferns that actually have their little spores on the side of them. So they, Asplenium bulbiferum, which has, it's called the hen and chicken because these tiny little ferns are actually on and you actually peg them down. So probably the propagation of ferns is a little bit more specific and probably should go into that in depth in another time.
Right.
If we've got a list.
Cinnamon useful for rooting growth?
I have not tried cinnamon for root and growth, so I can't confirm or deny.
Let's have a look here. We're starting to get a mix. Someone else has just planted their Jersey Benny potatoes for Christmas. Best new potatoes. I agree with you, Tom in Christchurch. I have a bush veggie garden in Titirangi. I usually start it up late September because it is shadeless then. This year, no planting done, but a lichen has grown prolifically over the weeded ground. I have used a top-up of veggie mix in former years, but have suspicion lime or superphosphate is needed first. Can you help, please?
Generally, lime is a good idea for a vegetable garden because of the natural acidity. One of the things with soil that we always need to remember is that New Zealand soil's natural state isn't the soil, optimum soil for a vegetable garden, and doesn't necessarily have all the optimum trace elements that we need. So you do need to maintain that equilibrium. Lime generally, if you're starting a vegetable garden, is always a good idea. Dolomite lime, just to say the difference, has magnesium in it, which is key for certain growth elements. So things like citrus plants that go yellow, if putting a bit of dolomite lime in is a good idea. Bit more expensive, but it is good.
Speaking of
even if you do dolomite lime one season and then lime for a couple.
Okay, speaking of turning yellow, if leaves on roses, hibiscus and fruit trees are turning yellow and curling with some brown spots, how can this be fixed without using nasty chemicals?
So it depends if it's disease, but it normally to me would suggest if I saw that in a garden, I would suspect that there was a dampness in the soil. That indicates to me that it's probably something to do with the water system. So it might need to be something to lift the plants. So it's remembering that as well as disease, it's about, is that plant in the right place? And the right place isn't just what's above the ground, it's also what's happening below the ground. So if you have a water path or stagnant water or something happening beneath that ground, or the permeability of that ground isn't what it should be, that will then put stress on the plant and then you will have more disease. So if you've got disease on roses and things at this time of year, it indicates that that location isn't optimum for those plants.
Someone suggests that honey is a really good root forming hormone. Just make sure you label the honey jar if you're putting it back in the fridge. One is a bit more philosophical, and I think we need to save it. It's talking about plant nurseries' role in maintaining plant genetic diversity through their chosen propagation methods. Yeah. I think that might be a whole subject another time, but thank you, Brad, for sending that in. And I have a request also, Xanthi, either for now or later. Is it too late? You know, with your strawberries, you're supposed to sort of... what's the word?
Do them in autumn.
Yeah.
Winter. Yeah.
You're so too late this now?
This is the thing I always say, just give it a go and give it a grow. And even if it's for next year, so you don't forget next year, then you know, try it. It's this thing with plants, often when they're dormant is normally the best time to be moving them around and doing things with them. And unfortunately, when the plants are dormant, a lot of us gardeners get a bit dormant too. We tend to sort of kind of retreat inside a little bit, and so then we come all out at spring and we're like, oops, missed that opportunity. And so, but I just think you know, get stuck in, divide them up, have a crack, and see how you go.
Let's talk more next time about the nursery's propagation role. I know you want to talk about dividing plants also, and we probably should be doing some more planting the next time we see you as well. I do want to just share one thing with you. I'm sure you've already discovered that my colleague Rob, who'll be familiar with afternoon listeners, often does your books for you. I have discovered this incredible weeding hook that can get right into the cracks between pavers and right under a dock plant, and it has changed my life. I will never be struggling around out there with a screwdriver again. $4.95 it cost. It was made in Christchurch.
Yeah, no, those are awesome. Those are very cool tools.
Pull away and spray, people. Get yourself a good gardening hook.
Yeah, I agree.
Thanks, Xanthi. Talk next time. Xanthi White,